Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Mays, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Jason Booth, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing the Gunnison River. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Jason a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure to sign up so that you can receive our announcements so that you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address from the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Jason Booth about fly fishing the Gunnison River. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as an unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of the fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kickboats, I'm convinced that the Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at, as Dave Whitlock put it, the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to www.bigskyinflatables.com. That's www.bigskyinflatables.com. Before we introduce Jason, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Jason's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away, and wait for this one, guys and gals, we're giving away a one-day float trip with Jason as your guide on the Gunnison River, courtesy of Gunnison River Guides. So we've never given, and Jason doesn't know I'm going to say this, but we've never given away a trip before on our show. So this is an absolute first. So pay close attention, and the question for you to win, you must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question will be something that Jason and I talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location in that text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills and pay attention. Take good notes so that you can maybe win that trip, float down the Gunnison with Jason Booth. Our guest tonight is Jason Booth. Jason, co-owner of Gunnison River Guides, has been a professional fly fishing guide for 23 years on the Gunnison and Taylor Rivers. Jason grew up on a trout stream in northern Michigan and had an extreme passion for fishing the lakes and their tributaries, especially for coastal browns and steelhead. On the Gunnison River, Jason has taken over 3,000 floats on commercial fly trips. That's about 6,000 people he's taken fly fishing. Jason has been featured in Southwest Fly Fishing and Fly Fisherman magazines, cover article in Centerfold, Falling in Love with the Gunnison in January of 2015. Respected guides Pat Dorsey and Landon Mayer both recognize and cite Jason Booth's wisdom in their admired books, Colorado's Best Fly Fishing, Flies, Access, and Guides, Advice for the State's Premier Rivers by Landon Mayer, and Pat Dorsey's 2015 release, Colorado Guide Flies. Jason's extensive time on the water made him a true expert on the Gunnison River. He loves fly fishing and teaching people how to do it. Jason sees all the hatches in the river and knows which flies work best for them. Hey, Jason, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
How are you doing, Roger?
I'm doing great. So Now you didn't do any floating today on the river, right? Take a
I
day
did not.
off?
I took the day off today. Yep, I did.
So how's fishing been up on the Gunnison lately?
It's been good. It's it's been a little hit and miss with the warm days, but before the warm weather hit, a couple of days ago, it's been real good. We've been running some big groups through and catching a lot of fish out nymphing, primarily with tractors and then dropper nymphs off the back of those. And tractors meaning like eggs and worms. The rainbow trout are on their peak spawn right now. There's a lot of trout in the holes below that are keying on the egg, and we're having a BWO hatch, blueing olive hatch, and so the little BWO nymphs are working good as trailers. Dry flies, small parachute atoms, fish are rising later in the day. But overall, I've been pretty happy with the fish numbers. We did one group, Children's Hospital Benefit, Risers for Rhett. And anyway, they brought in 30 guys, and we had a fishing tournament. And, it's all these guys donating, they it's part of the tournament. And, I ended up with a beginner and a semi-advanced guy. And our day went on, and we're catching fish, and I get the beginner guy, and he's catching fish. And we ended up with 25 fish landed, and, with a fat 19 as our biggest, on our scorecard. So I thought we were doing pretty good, and my guys in my boat thought they were doing pretty good. So at the end of the day, I talked to one of the other guides, and he was like, I was like, well, how did you do? And he was just like, wow, Eli got 81, and Hunter got a 23 as the biggest. So, I got off the phone, I look at my clients, well, we had one heck of a day, but, we didn't win, but we had one heck of a day.
Well, it sounds like you're off to a good start for the season.
The next weekend we had a group of guys in out of California, and it was 6 boats, 2 days, and the day before it hit 70, and it made it run off down the East River, and all the little feeder streams coming in came in dirty, and we caught half as many fish. And, and we really had to work at it, the springtime's all hit and miss.
That's what fishing's all about, isn't it?
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to get. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's start out. We're going to talk about the Gunnison tonight and your home waters there. And since we have an international audience, why don't you give people a brief geography lesson, let them know where the Gunnison River is, what part of the world it is.
All right. The Gunnison River originates in Almont, Colorado, and that's 20 miles south of Crested Butte. And Crested Butte's a pretty famous ski town in central Colorado. It's got Paradise Divide around it, and it drains a creek, and then there's another park called Taylor Park, and it drains a creek, and then they come together in the town of Almont. And that's the starting of the Gunnison River. Then it flows south into Gunnison, and from Gunnison, it kind of turns west and goes to Montrose. And that's when it enters the Black Canyon. The Black Canyon is a pretty famous fishery for their giant salmon fly hatch, very remote canyon. It's one of the most remote trout fisheries in the world. And then it eventually comes out into Grand Junction. And Grand Junction's on the Colorado border, and it merges in with the Colorado River. And then the Colorado River, flows southwest, out to the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, really to Las Vegas and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It gets diverted.
Well, it gets diverted. But.
Yeah, that's they couldn't live without us down there, I'll tell you.
Right.
Yeah, good. Now there's some distinct sections, and we got a question from Richard in Albuquerque. He says, what are the different sections of the Gunnison? He says, some with class 3 and 4 rapids in exclamation point. And then he talks about how to fish these different sections. We'll talk about the fishing of those later, but why don't you tell folks about the different sections?
The different sections, let me start, from Almont. Our section is broke up into, the section above Blue Mesa. I'll start there, and then I'll kind of work downstream. But anyways, from Almont to Northbridge, and Northbridge is like just above Gunnison, 1 mile. It's a pool drop. shallow riffle. It's kind of fast. There's a lot of private water. There's a lot of head gates. It's where they start pulling water for the irrigation fields out of the Gunnison River. There's fishing clubs on that stretch. Then from there down from North Bridge to Twin Bridges, and we call that the town stretch. And, you know, and that's, class one or two, and so is the upper river there. And, there's a lot more public water there. We have the Red and Easement. It's right there by North Bridge. It's got big, nice holes. They're public. It's very readable. Big shelf drops. Down below that, we have the Vantile Easement. You know, it's a big cliff wall behind Gunnison coming up. You know, 1,500-foot wall, you know, comes straight up out of the water. That's all public for a couple miles right there. Below that, we have Tamichi Park.
Well, now, for that section you've just described, that's called the upper?
We're on the upper Gunnison.
Still, okay.
Then in Taneo, they'll go, like, Twin Bridges to McCabe's, and they goes private through that stretch. Then it goes McCabe's to the lake, you know, and that's where we run into another national park. You know, and all this is pretty tame, you know. There's, like, a class, you know, 2-3 rapid for the whitewater people, you know, that the city built. But after that, you know, it goes into Morrow Point Reservoir, then Crystal Reservoir, then it goes into the east portal of the Gunnison, and this is at the top of the national park, and this is the Black Canyon National Park. Well, anyways, there's a 12-mile stretch of the Black Canyon there, and, you know, somewhere in time, sides of this canyon have fell in. I mean, these are 2,700-foot walls in a box canyon, and they fell in, and they made it unraftable. I mean, people tried kayaking and died, you know, trying to, you know, get down through there. Some guys make it. Some guys tell me horror stories of the poison ivy and having to go to the hospital, doing these huge portages around these big, you know, sections of cliff that fell into the river. Well, you know, and then this is called the Black Canyon. You know, there's hiking trails under there. You know, the park allows absolutely no guiding allowed in the Black Canyon. You know, it's a real level playing field down there. But below that is the Gunnison Gorge. You know, some people call it the Black Canyon, but, it's the Gunnison Gorge. It's where the outfitters can put in. It's where private boaters can put in. And, yeah, there are rapids that are Class 3 and 4. One of my good friends was a guide down there, and they doubled the flows down there. He flipped his boat, lost his boat, couldn't find his clients. He was on one side of the river, and he quit guiding. You know, just because, you know, the water level spiked, you know, and these outfitters, you know, they are true professionals down there, and they watch these water flows. They have very good guides. A lot of them are whitewater guides, you know, that double as fishing guides. But, yes, they are Class 3 or 4. Would I recommend somebody taking a boat down there and doing it? No. We're going with an outfitter or somebody that has been down the river with an outfitter, you know, that used to be a guide down there? Yes. It's certain water levels, it's pretty sketchy down there. You know, these old-time guides told me about a canyon, that Buttermilk Canyon, that flash flooded in when they were down there guiding, and the whole river dammed up. It was like a lake. And he said when he came into it, he was just like, oh, my God. You know, there's a dam in the river, you know, and then it, you know, it slowly washed out, and you know, he got his boat through, but it's the real deal down there. I mean, it's a very remote canyon, you know, epic in scenery, huge, you know, cliffs coming up out of the water. So it's pool drop, you know, it's textbook perfect on what you want to see, but yes, it does have big rapids in it.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a map, and I think, these are the rapid indicators, but let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 class 3, and two of those say that they could be 4s too. Of course, we all know from being on the river, a 3 could change to a 5 depending on the water level or down to a 1. So, but yeah, that's not your typical drift boat river, is it?
No, they're all inflatable rafts. And,
down
and,
there,
you know,
yeah.
Those outfitters do guide training down there, and all their guides are very good at running it.
Good. Yeah. Well, that gives us a general. So we've got the upper and the lower Gunnison up by the town of Gunnison, above and below it. And then we've got the Black Canyon, and then we've got the Gunnison River Gorge. So those are kind of the main sections that...
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and tonight we'll probably be talking mainly about the... we'll talk about all sections, but the upper and lower part as being the primary areas that, that people fish. Another question, Camilo Santana in Massachusetts asked, what's the best time to visit the Gunnison, and are there specific areas popular at that particular season? So give us an idea of what your normal good season is up there.
A lot of people like, you know, like the, our big dry fly hatches, and, they, you know, they come out in late June through, you know, mid-July. But, you know, we get the drakes, and the days are long. And after the drakes, you know, we get caddis and stones in the evening. And but, you know, something, my favorite time of year here is late August, early September, early October. I mean, it is so pretty here. We got the largest sockeye salmon run in the lower 48 that comes out of Blue Mesa. It pulls up a whole class of fish with it out of the lake. You know, the state record brown, 33 pounds, followed the salmon up, and some guy caught it. And, yeah, we get huge betas hatches. You know, the fish go egg crazy behind these salmon schools that we get hopper dropper fish in, you know. Like I say, we get the browns running out of Blue Mesa. But, yeah, you know, it's just a real special time of year here. Yeah, you know, another thing that I like about the fall is, you know, once school starts, you know, people have already spent their vacation with their kids. And all of a sudden you get the river back. And these fish don't get pressured, and they start feeding naturally. You don't get as many boats, you know, out on the water, not as many anglers. And it's just a really special time to be here.
Yeah, the last time I was up there, as we were talking earlier today, with my son, and we were actually fishing the Taylor, and we weren't doing good. I mean, we just couldn't get anything going, and then we talked to somebody on the river, and he said, well, have you guys been down to the East River? And these are the two feeder rivers that Jason just talked about that make up the Gunnison. And we said, no. He says, well, go down there. There's got the kokanee salmon run going on down there, and he says, you'll have a blast. And we went down there, and we did. So we went from trout to salmon in the same day. And like you said, they were just a blast.
They aren't huge salmon,
but they act like they want to think they're a big silver.
Yeah.
You know, so
good
area. So those are up above there too. Then and we were there in the fall too, Jason. It was beautiful, as you said. We were camping out up there, and it was really nice. So fall is your good time. Well, that in Colorado, fall is always a great time to be in Colorado, I think, too. It's one of my favorite times. What species of fish can we target? And I don't know if it varies from section to section, but if it does, let us know. So,
you know, for the most part, you know, it's a brown trouts are, you know, probably the most fish in the river. Rainbows, I think it's, you know, on the DOW numbers, it was almost 2-1. You know, we have 5,000 fish per mile on average. The lower Taylor had 7,000 fish per mile. You know, that's a lot of fish per mile. But anyways, brown trout are dominant. Rainbows, cutbows, and kokanees. And then once in a while you catch a brook trout. And you know something? Twice last summer I caught a tiger trout on my trips.
Huh.
You know, and that's where the brown and brook trout shared the same bed, and they make this really exotic looking teal-colored trout. Yeah, and you know, and it's kind of special. You know, and I actually called it out to my people, like, hey, one of my guides caught a tiger trout in this hole. You know, there's another cast mouth, and bam, there it was. You know, the tiger trout. They're really rare.
Yeah, I guess I've never seen one.
Yeah. Some days I catch more rainbows than browns. And it's totally bizarre. And some days I'll catch more browns than rainbows, but you know it'll flip flop. You know, like you know when you're out there every day, and it's just like some days it's just a rainbow day. You know, they're just really on the feed, and I don't know what makes that happen. But
what about cutthroats? Are they still in the river?
Oh yeah. We catch the upper river. You know, coming out of Almont to Northbridge, it seems like I catch the most cutthroats.
Okay.
You know they got the rainbow. You got the little orange cut underneath their jaw. There's some ranches, you know, that you know, stock high quality fish in the ranches, and I'm kind of wondering if it's a derivative from that.
They don't often stay where they were put in. So
no. High water puts everything into hyperspace for sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have the kokanee or sockeye there. That's right.
Yeah. Kokanee salmon.
And does that change when you get down into the Black Canyon or the gorge?
No, the Black Canyon's pretty much the same way. You know, there's not kokanees down there. But, you know, like when I fish the East Portal, I catch a lot of rainbows there. And it seems like when I put in a boat at Chucker Trail, you know, where the Gunnison Gorge is, you know, that first few miles is really good rainbow fishing. And then it kind of turns into a brown trout fishery, you know, once in a while catching a rainbow. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's water temperatures or what it is. But mm-hmm. it seems like, you know, the further you are up in the canyon, you know, there's more rainbows. And then the more you get down and start coming out of the canyon and down actually into those big meadows after the Black Canyon, it turns into a brown trout fishery almost.
Yeah.
You know, and once in a while catching a rainbow.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
I noticed a lot of rivers are kind of like that. It seems like, from my experience, the rainbows like the colder water closer to the dams, and the further away you get from a dam, the more browns you catch. But I don't know if that's a rule of thumb you can go by, but I've sure experienced that a lot. What kind of equipment do you need in the way of rods and, you know, weight rods and lines? What do you recommend people bring over with them?
You know, I like a 9'5" weight myself for the most part of, like, hopper dropper fishing and, you know, nymph fishing even, you know, my 5-weight rods. My favorite rod's a 10'5" weight, you know, out of the drift boat. But anyways, when I'm streamer fishing or kokanee fishing, I go straight to the 6-weight. You know, I've broken so many rods on the 2X or 1X, 0X, stuck in the tree, you know, and the people yank on it and crumple the rod, you know, when it's a 5-weight. Or the kokanee salmon, you know, they have such a strong drive to make it to where they're going to spawn. They just go crazy. And they'll find the breaking point of a 5-weight, you know, because, you know, you're running a little heavier tippet with them. And, but, yeah, you know, 6-weight for streamers and kokanees, 5-weights for dry fly fishing, hopper dropper fishing.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to take our first quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the Upper Gunnison and be more specific about that section. So hang with us, and we'll be right back. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 31 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jason Booth about fly fishing the Gunnison River. If you'd like to ask Jason a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. But Jason, I always ask my guests at this point in the show, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? Tell us a bit about your business and what's happening over on the Western Slope.
I own Gunnison River Guides with co-owner Joel Slanian. Joel was an Alaska guy up on Lake Iliama for a lot of years, and he moved down to Gunnison, and I ran into him, and I was just like, man, I'm breaking away from the Orvis shop, and I'm going to start my own guide service. And he was just like, I don't want to work for a shop either, and he goes, let's partner up. So we partnered up, and now we have, you know, 7 guys that work full-time for us. You know, we take a lot of people that own second homes around Crested Butte, you know, the ski area where, you know, people come in, entertain people skiing all winter. And, well, we take them fishing all summer. You know, we get a lot of people out of Fort Worth and Dallas and Houston and in the Front Range, you know, Denver and Boulder and Colorado Springs. And, you know, we have an excellent fishery here. You know, the Taylor River comes out of Taylor Park at the bottom of a dam, you know, at 10,000 feet, and then it stays in a box canyon in Taylor River. So when it hits the East River, it's coming in so cold that it maintains a very healthy fishery. I mean, like I said, we got, you know, 5,000 fish per mile, and, man, it's just a lot of fun. We got all the big hatches, you know, the drakes, the PMDs, the caddis, the stones, the trichos. Yeah, and then we get the kokanee run in the fall. We get all the fish that migrate out of Blue Mesa following the kokanee, or in the spring, the rainbows that come out of the Blue Mesa, which is a trophy trout lake, blue, and it's 30 miles long. You know, so they come up into the river, you know, in mass numbers and migrate. So, you know, we got this epic fishery going on. And, yeah, and I got a great team of guides, you know. I surrounded myself with the best guides I could find, and really good things have happened for us.
Good. What's your website?
Our website is www.gunnisonriverguides.com.
Oh, that's an easy one, gunnisonriverguides.com. Okay, yeah. And then everybody can see what you want. And you have walkway plus float trips both.
Yes, correctly. Yeah.
Okay, great. Great. Well, good. Well, thanks for sharing, and we'll get back to it here. Then let's talk about the Upper Gunnison. We have a question from John and Winslick in Jefferson City, Missouri. He says, do you guide the upper part of the Gunnison River as well as the lower gorge and canyon area? Was there in 2013 and noticed hardly any rainbows in the lower river compared to lots in the upper. Are the rainbows still not recovering from whirling disease, or does the state not stock them? That was a bunch of questions there.
You know, John, that's an excellent question. Anyways, I guide the upper Gunnison only. You know, my permit's from Almont to Blue Mesa and all its drainages. You know, so I'm on that. But I do employ some of the top guides out of the Black Canyon. One is Hunter Pearson, and anyways, the other one's Jake Kepler. You know, Hunter works for Gunnison River Expeditions. Jake works for Black Canyon Anglers. And these guys are on the river all the time. You know, they fish the canyon through the big hatches, and then they'll come up and work for me all summer. Jake's a little more of a year-round guide out of the Black Canyon, and Hunter come up, you know, right after the big stonefly hatch and work for me. As far as the question about the rainbows, Colorado and Parks and Wildlife, they brought in the Hoffer River Rainbow. The Hoffer River Rainbow is a fast-growing, disease-resistant rainbow. It's really pretty. It's got, you know, a bright red stripe on it. And anyways, it spawns hard. It's fast-growing. But the Colorado Parks and Wildlife down in the canyon, what they're doing is in the east portal above the – when you drive down there, there's a big cofferdam, and it's almost like big impoundment up above the cofferdam, and there's a rapid in there. Well, what they're doing this week, actually, is they're spawning all that original strain of trout from the turn of the century, and they're getting those eggs, and they're taking them to a hatchery, and they're growing these rainbow fry, and they're reintroducing them back down into the canyon, you know, to offset the damage done from, you know, the whirling disease. Personally, myself, I have not seen any evidence of the whirling disease in 10 years.
Okay, so that's pretty much over with, huh?
Yeah. I know the Hoffer Rainbow is actually the fix. I mean, it doesn't affect them.
Good. Another question, Craig in Portland asks, where are a couple of sections that a visiting out-of-state fisherman could access for wade fishing in the fall?
My favorite places, you know, for wade fishing in the fall, one's going to be the Roaring Judy Fish Hatchery on the East River. You know, it's a small cobble river. It's very readable. It's very easy to walk wade. There's a lot of fish there. You just pay attention to the regs and where you can be and where you can't be. You know, like the Taylor River, it's a little harder walk wading. You know, the fish numbers are there. But absolutely where I spend most of the people is down in the Kier County National Park. The fishing accesses from the highway are going to say Cooper's Ranch, Never Sink. I mean, they're beautiful holes in there. You know, they're big shelf drops, you know, big undercut banks, you know, very wadeable. You're out in a meadow. You don't worry about private property. It's very scenic. You get all the bug hatches. The fish numbers are there. The kokanees are down there. And in the fall, I really like it. The hopper dropper fishing. It's fun just to tie on a hopper, like a Dave's hopper, and just start covering ground. You know, laying it down, picking it up, laying it down, picking it up. Oh, there's one. And that's a fun way to fish down there. If that's a little slow, you can always drop a little pheasant tail off the back of it. But, the Cooper's Ranch Never Sinks is my favorite.
So, and there is, though, quite a bit of private water around, right?
Yeah.
In that section that you have to float through to get at. But plenty of wade fishing from what it sounds like. By the way, what's it like in the private areas? You might tell other people from out of state what the rights are of the ranchers there and what we're permissible to do on the river. You want to kind of go through that real quick?
In the state of Colorado, the landowner owns the bottom of the river. And in the state of Colorado, you do not have to advertise private property. It's your responsibility to know where you are, right? So anyways,
from a guide, in other words, they don't have to put a sign out posted kind of thing.
No.
You're just supposed to know you're on a private ranch, huh?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
You know, and like, and I see this all the time. People will put in private boats, and they'll jump out in the wrong spot. You know, and I kind of like, you know, let them know, floating by, hey, you know, it's private right here. You better get going. But anyways, you know, like my way around the private property is I'll rig 6 rods in my boat. My boat holds 6 rods. I have a ProGuide Boulder Boat Works boat, and they have a great rod system in them. And then the people are fishing 2 rods, right? And in these private property stretches, I'll run a rig that doesn't break off all the time, like a dry dropper rig or a streamer rig or a dry fly rig, just so I can not have to pull over and retie all the time. You know, nymphing rig's a pretty high maintenance rig. You know, you got to be on it. You know, like me as a guide, I'm really on my people. You know, pull it in. You know, like hold your cast. You see it coming 100 yards? All right, cast, you know. But anyways, trespassing is a big deal in Colorado, and you definitely got to know where you're at.
So what can you do? Can you row into an eddy? Is it you can't put an anchor down and you can't put a foot down, basically, right?
Yeah, you know, you can eddy out. You know, landowners don't like it. You know, for the most part, they're not out there enforcing it. What they don't like is people parking the boat and getting out.
You
know, if you drop anchor, the sheriff told the landowner, I was talking to a landowner about it, and he said the sheriff was just like, unless you have a picture with the anchor down or people out of the boat, there's nothing I can do about it. They have as much right to be there, you know, so, yeah.
What's the penalty if you get to the takeout and the sheriff's standing there?
I'm not sure exactly what the ticket is. I've never been in that situation.
You've never been through that.
You know, I don't want to be through that with those fishing clients either.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm sure it'd be don't do it again.
Yeah.
You know, like you just like plead, hey, I'm from out of town. I had no idea. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Play the dummy card. Yeah. Another question, Tony in Kansas. Jason, if you had any luck fishing the Gunnison with streamers the day after the kokanee were released from the Roaring Judy hatchery. I guess he's talking about the fry coming out of the hatchery or something?
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the kokanee fry. The no moon in April, mid-April, the Division of Wildlife in the middle of the night or, you know, in the early, you know, sometimes it's like 6 at night or whatever. But anyway, they release 1.5 inch and a half long salmon fry into the East River. So then these salmon fry go through the hatchery ponds into the East River, down the East River, into the Gunnison. So right at daylight, you know, all of us fishing guides, and if we don't have a trip that day, we put in our boats, and we try to follow that whole wave of salmon down the river. 2 years ago, it was absolutely incredible streamer fishing. Like, every hole, you know, we had multiple fish coming out. You know, they were actually puking out fry, you know, in the net all over in the bottom of the boat. And, well, this year, they let the salmon go earlier, and they made it down into the river system before we got our boats on the water, and the fish were full. And it was a very slow day, and I thought for sure it was going to be a home run. So, yeah. But, you know, the other thing that happens with that salmon fry release is the days coming into that release, we're running super high fish numbers. I mean, like incredible high fish numbers. You know, like we know where all the fish wintered, and, you know, we just kind of get to those holes and let people fish those. Well, for about 4 or 5 days after that salmon fill-up that they got when they got gorged, they're just not really hungry. And then after 4 or 5 days, they'll start feeding on the bugs again. But what they are programmed to is the streamer. I tied a white rabbit. I took a tungsten eyes. And then I wrapped a tensile body all the way up, and I laid that and tied in the rabbit strip, and I glued it to it and figure eight it around the eyes, and I absolutely lit it up for a week, you know, after they started feeding again. And they were still programmed to eat that little salmon fry.
Right. Yeah. So there is something to that, obviously.
Yeah.
But your timing has to be pretty much perfect when it happens.
Yeah, that's a good question, Tony.
Yeah. David in Westminster, Colorado, says, what are the most productive feeder rivers after runoff into the Gunnison drainage? He says the Lake Fork of the Gunnison, Cochetopi and Cibola, the East River. So you've been talking about the East River. Do you want to talk about these other feeders?
After runoff, what you'll have going on is the Drake Hatch is going to come up the Gunnison, and it's going to go into the Taylor River. And when it hits the Taylor River, that is coming out of a dam, and it's real consistent flows, real consistent temperature. And anyways, those Drakes and PEMDs will actually go 2 weeks longer in that river than they do in the Gunnison. And they eventually make it all the way to our dam Taylor, which is the Taylor catch and release. And those fish up there, you know, there's like, you know, 20-pounders in there, you know, like a lot of 20-inchers, a lot of 25-inchers. They'll be eating those Drake and PMDs. So you got to hit the Taylor River. Well, above the Taylor River is Taylor Reservoir, and all those feeder creeks coming into it, Willow Creek and Texas Creek and the actual Taylor Creek coming into it, all those rivers eventually terrace beaver dams in them. You know, up in them, and those are fun. You know, those are just loaded with brook trout and stuff. The Lake Fork, same thing. Drake's PMD right after runoff. There's a ranch, you know, like right when you first come down into the Lake Fork Valley, and the road veers, you know, to the left, you know, going up towards Lake City. But there's a semi-new ranch that the Division of Wildlife set up a deal with, where there's public access to it, where it's never been before, and there's actually like 20 low head dams that they built in there, you know, years ago, but man, the fish are just stacked in there. As far as that, you know, I don't get up in the high country as much as I would like to. Another good one up in Taylor is Union Park, and that's the upper Lotus. There is absolutely 1,000 beaver dams up that drainage, and you can't fish them all in a week. And it's pretty neat because you sneak up behind the dam and see all the fish rising, you know, and you got your drakes and your PMDs and your little parachute abs, your caddis. And yeah, it's pretty neat, though. Yeah, cool.
Time to take another quick break, but we'll be right back and talk with Jason more about the Gunnison River. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit dryflies.com. Again, that's dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jason Booth about fly fishing the Gunnison River. If you'd like to ask Jason a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. So let's just do a quick check-in on our questions online here, Jason. So I got a question from Steve in Castle Rock. He says, does the Gunnison River have any native greenback trout?
I've never caught a native greenback trout in the Gunnison. You know, where I have caught them is Henry Lake. It's the very, very top of, what would it be? It's not the Lotus, but it's a little creek that comes into Taylor Canyon. It's called Henry Lake. It'd be like, you know, going up valley. It's on your right. It's like 10-mile hike up in there, but that's the only place I've ever seen one. But I have never personally caught one in the Gunnison.
Okay. Steve also wanted to know if, you know, what's your go-to best fly and during what seasons?
You have a favorite? That's a tough question there.
It's always there's a lot of depends, right?
Okay, you want to know my go-to rig. you know, that I probably fish most of the summer or, you know, most of the year. Like in the morning, I'll run a tan San Juan worm for my attractor, and I'll start dropping, you know, like Dorsey's Mercury RS2, other RS2s, you know, I'm dropping trichos. But, you know, that's my go-to rig. Pat Rubber Leg catches a lot of fish in our river. Yeah, yeah, pheasant tails. I mean, that's a tough question just because.
Yeah, because you know, there's so many
variables.
It's always
changing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but, yeah.
Another question, Phil asked, how long does it take to get there from Glenwood Springs? And Phil, you can't get there from Glenwood Springs. It's impossible.
Glenwood Springs, that would be, I want to say that'd be, close to 2 hours. You know,
it's a long way.
Go. No, because there's a path in there's a Kebler Pass out the back of Crested Butte, and that's going to drop you off into Erickson Springs, and then you go over another path. Yeah, and then you're going to come down into the I-70 corridor.
Yeah, in the summertime, yeah, that would work. But that's a dirt road back there on Keebler, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Okay. It's a beautiful road, though. It's the largest aspen grove. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you go from Glenwood to Carbondale over, what's that pass between Carbondale and Paonia?
I want to say it's Marshall, but I could be wrong. It's right on the tip of my tongue, but I don't go over that way too often. But my fishing clients do. You know, they kind of do the circuit of all the good fishing in Colorado.
Yeah.
But, you know, they can go over there and fish the Roaring Fork and stuff, and they have a lot of good things to say about that area over there.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good area too. Yeah, that's the way you do it
there.
Though. Come through the backside of Crested Butte.
Yeah, you come into Crested Butte in the back door there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Another one talking about the upper here. Dave Hudak in Ohio. He says, my son Andrew and I will be in the area the week of 7/16 to 7/23. We will be staying a little southwest of the city of Gunnison. We're planning on fishing Gunnison and the Taylor, but we also enjoy great smaller stream fishing. You know, he's asking about the tributaries in Taylor and Lake Fork. So he just talked about that. I think you're covered there. Yeah. Okay. So I think you already covered that question pretty thoroughly. So we talked a bit about public access up there at the top. And now, you got a launch put in up at Altmont? Is that Altmont?
There's a public launch right at the confluence of the two rivers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then that floats down to, where's your takeout?
Then it'll float 10 miles. And then we have Northbridge, which is 1 mile north of Gunnison. A lot of times I'll put in the Almond and I'll run past that boat launch to the next one. I actually eat lunch under Northbridge.
Okay.
But, and then it comes down to Twin Bridges where the Whitewater Park is and the city built a big kayak park and stuff. And I just kind of get through that little stretch of river, you know, keep people in their life jackets and tell them to sit down and let's just get through these whitewater hits. And after that, it goes down to McCabe's. And that's like, you know, 2 miles south of, you know, the river does big old oxbow in there. And then it comes to McCabe's and just below McCabe's, there's just a little window of private property, and the rest of the day, it's, 3 miles of, 4 miles of the Keir County National Park. And then our next takeout would be at the lake, and at high water years, we bring electric motors, and we have to motor out a mile.
So from Almont down to McCabe's, how long how many miles is that?
Almont to McCabe, so that would be 10, 4 and 4. So, yeah, so that would be almost 18 miles.
Yeah.
And that's a long day, too. But, you know, when the fishing's good and the flows are up, I can pull that trip off.
Otherwise you get off at Twin Bridges. Is that it?
Yeah, Twin Bridges, or even if it's a half day, I'd take out at Northbridge.
Okay, because what we have to realize is you're not getting out and doing a lot of waiting for – quite a few of those miles, right?
Well, no, yeah, it'd be just because it's not only private property. When the Gunnison River's up, it's very hard to wade. You know, Cooper's Ranch is a little more user-friendly just because you can stand on the shore and fish those big holes. But, I mean, it's pushy. I mean, I you know, anything over 500 CFS, I do not recommend anybody trying to get in the water and cross.
So you're pretty much fishing from the boat
you will swim
most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, we do a lot of float trips. You know, 90% of our trips are out of drift boats or in specialized inflatable rafts and stuff. And, you know, it's safe. The boat pulls up right next to the hole. You know, it's just like there's the shelf drop. You know, all the fish are going to be right there. When your strike indicator goes off that shelf drop, throw your mend. And then it floats a couple more feet and thump, down it goes, you know, fish on.
Yeah. So the in this upper section here, still we're in the upper section, and maybe you can just answer this for both the upper and the lower section. Are the hatches pretty much the same throughout both those sections?
For the most part, yes. The thing that's different is the Black Canyon in the Gunnison Gorge has probably the biggest salmon fly hatch in the world. You know,
okay, well, we'll get to those in a minute. Let's just stay in the upper part. So what are the primary, the main hatches that we're going to find there in the upper and lower section?
You know, like right now, what we got going on is a big blueing hatch. You know, I was out in front of my house today, and there was a dozen fish on a rhythm out there eating bluings. And, you know, I was watching them. I mean, they were eating the mergers and, you know, over the duns. But anyways, after our blueing hatch, we're going to have high water. And then during high water starts our caddis, right? And we'll actually get blanket caddis hatches where they're all flying upstream, and they'll hit a bridge, and they'll flow up over it. You know, like, and you know, it's just biblical.
Stephen King movie, huh?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's just like there's absolutely hundreds of thousands in your sight all the time, flying upriver. You know, and then this is in the evening. And anyway, so high water's going to start weaning right during the middle of that caddis fly hatch, and that's the first one we're throwing dry flies to. You know, and so anyways, stone flies are starting to hatch right then too, you know, like, you know, we're skating big stones and stuff with those, like a stone in a dry caddis. That's a pretty fun rig. We're throwing woolly buggers too for those stones. Well, you know, and that hatch is going to start weaning a little bit, and then we're going to start seeing PMDs. The PMDs, there's just, I mean, tons of them coming off in the holes. And, you know, we start at the lake, and these PMDs will be going off, and all us guys are going to be down there at the lake, you know, floating that last stretch, waiting for the drakes, right? And so these PMDs will be going on, you know, for a week, 10 days, and all of a sudden you'll just start seeing those big black tent wings coming down the water. All the birds are coming to the water, getting really excited, hopping around the shore. And so we're going to get these huge drake hatches, and we'll start following that one up the river, you know, as it goes up, you know, and then eventually we'll be in Almont putting in all our boats. Well, at that time, after the drakes are done, you know, we'll have, you know, stonefly hatch still going on, and then after that we're going to have a trico hatch, and our trico hatch is it looks like smoke on the water. You know, you look down river and it's all like smoky, foggy, but you look at it really close and the whole cloud, you know, which is a quarter mile long, it's rising and dropping all in unison, and you look down in the water and you can see fish flashing, and you know, we got game for all that too. But anyways, after our trico hatch, we will have a few caddis, and then it goes back into our blueing hatches. Our hoppers kick in late August, mid August. We'll have a stonefly hatch, and I'm not sure what stonefly it is. You know, the females are really big. It's not the orange belly canyon stone, but it's almost as big. But all the males are wingless. And they're all over in the rocks. We'll be backing in our trailers in the morning. They're running all over. And you look at the bridge pilings. And, you know, like a week before, you know, there'll be like, you know, 40, 50 hucks on it. And it'll go to like actually literally like 1,500, 2,000 shucks on the bridge wet from the night before. Well, when I see that, I'm throwing woolies. And I'm trailing the coachman behind the woolie because all the rainbow fry in the river, which is a hatch all itself. You know, all the rainbows that spawn, by then their fingerlings are, or you know, their little hatchlings are, the fry are about an inch long. So the woolly with the coachman, when all those stoneflies are going off and you have advanced anglers, it's game on. Cover the ground. The big fish are out looking for them. And after that goes on, we go back into our blue wings and mahogany dun. The mahogany done is, a lot of people call them blue inks, but I actually, like, had a professional photographer taking photos of them. Jason Stumpel, he's got amazing camera lenses. But he was taking pictures of all these flies on the water, and I was showing a guy that owned a fly shop, and he goes, dude, those aren't blue inks, those are mahogany duns. But they actually carpeted the river. And then that's when we're fishing all our RS2s. And, you know, another thing about attractors in the Gunnison, the San Juan worm, the Gunnison is a flood-irrigated valley. And what happens is in the Gunnison, they'll flood out these fields and kill all these earthworms and stuff. Well, when they drain that field, drains back into the Gunnison, there's just a high number of San Juan worms coming down the river. And then you actually, like, pump a fish, and you will fill your hand full of worms some days. And it's just like, oh, San Juan worm. Well, then, you know, later in the day, betas come off. You know, so I run a San Juan worm and a betas RS2. Dorsey's got some real good ones, too. But anyways, once they start tagging that mayfly over that worm, I'll go double mayflies, you know, and then later in the hatch, you'll notice the fish start rising, you know, and then I'll start throwing, you know, the little parachute atoms and stuff with people, you know, break up the nymph and rod with them and stuff. But yeah.
You don't get excited when you're out there with those fish, do you?
Oh, no, not me. Dan, you think I'm bad. You should see Hunter. You know, the one of my guides, Hunter, is a whole notch higher than me.
I mean, you just talking about it, I can, you know, can just picture you getting excited about these hatches.
Oh, yeah. Well, you want to know something that's exciting, though? The green drake hatch, there's 5,000 fish in the river. It's the only hatch that I've ever seen that'll make that many fish rise. You know, like, if it's raining out and all those fish are hatching, as far as you can see up the river and as far as you can see down the river, there's rising fish.
And you never knew there were that many fish, right?
You know that. Yeah, it's just like, oh my God, they're everywhere, you know. And it's just, you got dry shade going, everybody's soaking wet, it's pouring down rain, but you know, it's the best day of fishing of their life.
Yeah, I know. I remember a day on the Bighorn, it was cold and snowy, and the blue wing olives were coming off, and we were fishing this one hole, and it was like, I just couldn't believe there were that many fish there, you know. I mean, you just don't know until they start feeding, and all of a sudden there's hundreds of fish in a very small area, and you go, oh my gosh, how did that happen?
Oh, yeah.
But I know what you're talking about.
I was going to say, one of the coolest things that I've ever done here was donate a couple days to the Division of Wildlife with their shocking boats, right? And, you know, they called all the guide services. I was working for the river shop. And, you know, I was just like, heck, yeah, I'll go with you guys. I want to check this out. You know, but anyways, you know, sure, we got tons of fish and all that. But, man, we started getting these giant browns, right, because we were doing it in the fall, you know. And I go to the biologist. I was like, man, why don't I catch these on my fishing trips? And he goes, you know why you don't catch those on your fishing trips? Because you're not using other fish as bait. And, I mean, these are fish pushing 30 inches, you know, like.
And why aren't you catching them? What did you say?
Because
why?
You don't use because he says they turn into fish eaters once they get that big.
Oh. Well.
Yeah, you know, dude, you know, that's the thing that's amazing. The most amazing thing about the Gunnison River is the amount of large fish per section. You know, like the other day we had a fishing trip, and they're like, oh yeah, we had a big one eating it, trying to eat it. It was huge. And the hunter was like, yeah, it was the one in the Western. And then, you know, so I get talking to his client a little later, and I go, hey, man, you know, he's an advanced guy out of Denver. You know, he carp fishes and stuff and you know, trout fishes, and he knows what a big fish is. I go, hey, man, how big was that fish? And he goes, probably 12 to 14 pounds. He said they had it on for 5 minutes, and it would hide under the boat, and they'd slide the fish out, and the big one would come back out, you know, and try to get angle on it, and they were pulling the fish away and slapping streamers down in front of it, trying to get it to eat it. But that's an amazing thing about this river. You know, like 2 years ago, I pulled a 33. I've pulled many fish over 30 inches, too. It's hard to land them on the nymphin rigs. You know, it usually takes a streamer rig to get those big ones in. But walk wading, it's tough. Boat, you got a little better angle on them.
Yeah. Okay, let's move down to the lower Gunnison. And by that definition, the lower Gunnison is pretty much the section below Gunnison to right. Blue Mesa. Is that what we call the lower Gunnison?
Yeah, okay.
Well, this is kind of a general question, but I throw it in here. Paul Salmons in Texas, he says, I've never been on a float trip. How do presentations differ from walk wade, and what's the biggest difference in floating versus walk wade? I think that's a pretty good question.
That's an excellent question. Let's start with walk wading. So basically, when you walk up into a piece of river, you know, walk wading, you work your way upstream, right? You're behind the fish. You work maybe 10 holes in a day. You know, it's how far you want to walk. You know, there's plenty of fish in every hole, so you don't really cover that much ground. You just kind of perfect where you're at. You know, like, what are they eating? You know, like, if you're throwing dry flies, you throw dry flies. Once you work up next to the hole, you'll throw your nymph and rig, you know. But float fishing, you're working downstream. You know, like, your casts are going, you know, straight to shore. The guy in the front's quartering it, you know, up ahead of the boat a little bit. And you're using the boat to get these perfect drifts, right? That's the biggest difference. You know, and the other thing is a float trip versus a walk wade is 10 holds versus 300.
Yeah.
You know, so you get the shots. You know, myself as a fishing guide, I like, you know, like, when there's a high volume of people on the river and stuff, you know, and I try to get all my guides to do this too, float far and fast. You know, you get your one fish, your two fish, go to the next one, go get your one or two. Because, you know, like, us as guides, we can sit there and pull every fish out of that hole, you know, once they're feeding. And you know something? The next day, it doesn't fish you good. Or if the walk wader coming up the river, he steps into that hole, he doesn't think the river's fishing at all. You know, so in generally, it's better for the float fishermen just to keep moving, just grab your fish on the run. And it's better for everybody, like the walk waders and stuff. They're, you know, working their way upstream. When I see walk waders, I tell my people, hey, pull it in. I'm going to take, you know, the far line around him. Let's just get around this guy. He's working upstream. We're giving up this hole. We're giving up the next one. You know, like, you guys, we got a lot of water coming. Let's just give it to him.
Yeah. You know, so. I remember, too, yeah, when you're from a boat, you can get deeper, longer drifts.
For sure.
I remember there was this channel up down in the San Juan River that we were fishing from the boat, and we do, you know, with a nymph rig, really deep drifts through there, and we pick up all kinds of nice fish. And then we got out, and the next day we walked around and tried to fish it from the shore, and it was just too hard. You couldn't get down long enough to get a good drift deep enough from the shore, you know, but from a boat it was a piece of cake. You get to a lot of places that you can't get to from walk wade as well.
Have you ever fished the 90-degree rig?
Do you
know what the 90-degree rig is?
No.
Okay, so anyways, you got your nymphing rod, right? Let's say you got your leader. It doesn't matter what leader it is either. You take your pair of clippers and cut your leader at 20 inches down from your fly line, right? Mm-hmm. So then you tie on a piece of 2X, right? You come down halfway to where your sinkers are going to be, and let's say you're fishing 4X to your first fly. So then you'd run 3X on to your sinkers, and then you go 4, then 5 to your second fly. So what's happening there when you, like, let out line downriver, and you fire your cast way upstream, there's no leader to float slowly down. You throw the roll cast stack men, you know, upriver, those flies instantly go straight down in the water under your indicator. It's just all tippet, and it's a very effective way to fish,
deep,
like I'm saying, into deep water to where you, you know, it's hard to get a tapered leader to sink into.
Yeah.
And, I'm a little better at showing people than, you know, most, but, the 90-degree rig works. You know where it really works and it really accelerates is the Taylor Dam tailout. Those fish are so leader shy. If you come through with those tippet rigs, like if I did a trip tomorrow up at the catch and release, the first thing I do, you know, and we're going to be nymphing, the first thing I do is chop their leaders off and go right to the 90-degree rig. It's tippet. It eliminates them looking at that leader and shying away and swimming off your drift. It's the difference of catching and trying to catch.
Hmm. Yeah, those are big monsters up there in the Taylor, too. Like,
yeah, I think the good net guy the biggest thing about the Taylor is having a partner that's a good net guy. You've got to get those fish in the net, otherwise you're not going to get them at all.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to be quick. They're going to give you a little window of opportunity to get them, and you got to take it. And you got to have a big, long-handled net, and you play as a team.
Yeah. Okay, let's move along here. So we're talking about the Lower River now. The Lower River has Lower Gunnison has more public access, it looks like on my map, than the Upper, and that's between Gunnison
right.
And Blue Mesa Reservoir. There. And you already talked about the Nevers Sink and Cooper Ranch as being mm-hmm. good places to access the river down there. But you can't. Let's see. The furthest you can float down is McCabe's. Is that it? And then after that, you're gonna better have a motor on your boat.
No. That's not correct.
Okay.
From the Whitewater Park to McCabe's is a 4-mile run. You may, maybe 3.5. Well, then when you get to McCabe's, it's a little park. It's called Riverway. Out on the highway, they have a 0.5 mile of water there, 0.75 mile upstream on the far side of the river. It's public. It's the city of Gunnison's water treatment plant owns it. They have great fishing right there. McCabe's hole is one of the highest numbers of fish in the river in that hole. Well, there's a bridge there. Well, you get 4 miles of river below that is Kerr County National Park. That's where Cooper's Ranch Nevers Sink is. So that's below McCabe's coming into
right.
Blue Mesa. Yeah, and
but,
when low water years, we'll get another mile of river sometimes.
But I thought I heard you say earlier past McCabe's, the next takeout is actually in Blue Mesa, Turkey?
It's Wilson, Turkey. It's on the highway. The Park Service renamed stuff on us, but a lot of my clients still know that it's Turkey Takeout. But it's Wilson's Landing. That's 4 miles below McCabe's. And that's actually like, the picture in the Fly Fishing magazine with those big, beautiful holes. But it braids out into a bunch of islands and island tailouts. What's cool about the islands is all the guides got to take one channel. Well, there's channels all around and all through the islands that, as a walk wader, you can just go up there and fish with, dry flies, and they haven't been touched by the guides,
Yeah. So, but back to my question, I'm trying to figure out if I can float down to whatever I forget what you call it, but on the map I'm looking at is Turkey.
Yeah, the Wilson's Landing, Turkey Takeout.
Wilson's Landing. Do you need a motor to get to that?
No, you don't. We bring it because we're working every day, and sometimes there's a 0.5 mile of you got to push into the wind. Well, we have like a little motorized golf cart batteries and a little electric motor under our seat, and we'll just click it on there and take the easy day rather than pushing for that half hour to get to the takeout. Like right now, the takeout has current at it, right? It's right at the lake inlet. Well, come July 1st, it's going to be all the way up to Cooper's Ranch, which is, 3/4 of a mile. Well, then come August, 15th, it'll be back down below the takeout again, because the reservoir will ebb and flow up with runoff, and then they'll start letting it back out through the canyon, and it'll ebb and flow out back into a takeout again.
So it's really dependent on how much water is in Blue Mesa, basically.
Uh-huh. You know what it does is it eliminates a lot of float fishermen. And the guys with motors, you get to see the epic fishing without not a lot of the other guides on the river because they don't want to push out. Well, all my guides have electric motors, and we take full advantage of that national park down there.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
We talked about the hatch. It's pretty much the same there. Anything specific about that Lower Gunnison that you want to talk about that makes it you've already mentioned a bunch of things that makes it special, but anything more before we move on and talk about the Black Canyon?
No, I don't think so. It's just the Kokanee
pretty
Dam and, bringing it. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the Black Canyon then, which is the next major section of the river. Well, we've got a couple of questions. Let me get these questions. Joe Fowler, Shreveport, Louisiana, says, I'm 70 years old and in fair shape, but not great shape, nothing like I was 10 years ago. Are there any public access points that I can hike in, have time to fly fish, and get back out in the Black Canyon of the Gunnison? Sounds like he's looking for a day hike in and out.
Actually there is. There's a... Joe Fowler, Shreveport. My wife, she's from Texarkana. Sherry Shelton. Yeah, she's got Fowler in the family. That's funny. I wonder if they're related. the Chucker Trail, which is the start of the Gunnison Gorge there. That's probably 1.5 miles that one. you know, as far as those other ones, you know, the Gunnison Point Trail, you know, it's a pretty short one. I think it's the shortest one. As far as being 7 years old, you know, all those trails, you got an hour uphill of taking 10 steps and breathing and take 10 steps and breathing, you know. Yeah, I would actually go to the East Portal if, yeah. You know, that's a tough question.
Yeah, I would caution. One of the things, the last time I was there, and this was probably 30 years ago, so I was, you know, I was like 32 years old when I went down, and I hiked down there solo, backpacked down, and stayed the night on a sandbar. And back then at the park, they log everybody going in and out down those trails because people don't make it out. I mean, they get stuck or they get a heart attack. And every year somebody dies
down there too.
Going down there.
It's hot down there.
And I remember them telling, I remember stories, and I kind of wouldn't believe it until I did it myself, but it's so darn steep going in there that they said people backpacking on the way up, they're throwing stuff on the side of the trail because they don't want to carry it out, you know, because it's so steep coming up. And sure enough, I saw, you know, like frying pans and stuff on the side of the trail down there because people had chucked these things trying to get out, you know. But it is not easy. It is not easy.
Uh-huh. I would recommend the East Portal. There's plenty of fishing right there. You know, you can drive your car down to the river. There's no guiding allowed, so it's a level playing field. But those trails are serious. And if it gets, you know, 85 degrees in Gunnison, it's 100 down there.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the other thing is, hiring an outfitter and going down through the Gunnison Gorge is a pretty special trip. I think a two-person one day is like 1,200, and three-day two-person is 5,000.
Oh, you're talking about the gorge, not the canyon now, though.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just talking about, like, if I was 70 and wanting to fish the Black Canyon, I'd either go to the portal or use the outfitter. Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of good in-shape 70-year-olds that could easily do it, but I would definitely do a little hiking before you came and you can go find the biggest hill you can find and walk to the top of it and see if you really want to do it or not.
Okay, next question was from Dave in Mesa, and he's asking, can you discuss the East Portal section, since you just were talking about that? He says, best CFS, lies, et cetera. Also, the area upstream of Pleasure Park. Where's Pleasure Park?
Pleasure Park, so like when you come out of the canyon, all of a sudden the Smith Fork comes in, and then it kind of turns into like ranch land, big giant holes. The Pleasure Park, you hear the people call it Leroy's. Leroy was the outfitter for Gunnison River Expeditions. He jet pulled people up. You know, he had the jet boat service as a jet boat you up. But they still do that down there, but he's passed away. You know, a lot of people love that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a character.
So that's down in the gorge, right?
Yeah, that's down in the gorge, but that's the Pleasure Park area that he's talking about. But as far as, you know, the East Portal section of the Gunnison, is the best CFS, if you don't have a personal watercraft like a kickboat or a ducky, is 500. 500, you can cross the back of the big hole down below the campground. If I was going down there fishing tomorrow or anytime, I'd take a 7.5-foot leader, 4X leader. I'd pull my strike indicator up to the tip of my rod. I would build that leader out with 4X to my reel seat. I'd go double five off of that. So you got to actually 9 foot from your indicator to your sinkers, and that's what I light it up on down there. You know, here's the other flip of the coin is, in the fall you have hoppers down there and golden stones, and all these fish will come up to the shoreline, and you'll be out there nymphing where you should have been dry dropper fishing, you know, kicking the hoppers and droppers along the shores or the big rogue stones and stuff and keep moving. And, you know, the thing about the East Portal is you cross the river and you go downstream about half a mile or so or three quarters of a mile. There is an up and over, and it is not for the fair heart. If you're scared of heights, don't even think of it. When you get up there, you kind of like lose your way for a second, and there's a big cliff, you know, like 60 yards down to the river, and then you get back on the trail and then you drop back down. But when you get down below that point, that rarely gets fished by very many people. And I've seen giant browns photos from the guys that, you know, that are black-handed guys that go up there on their day off, you know, from Hunter and Eli, you know. But anyways, those guys move and fish. They're hunting for the big ones, you know, right along the shore, and they're just dry dropper, dry fly. But
I know
when I go down there.
When I went down there that time, you know, and did an overnight, the other issue that you got to face is some of those trails that go down in there. Once you get down in there, you know, I only had like 100 yards to work with on the river, you know. You couldn't, then it turned into sheer cliff, you know, so you can't go up and down the river very far once you're there.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, some guys carry truck tire inner tubes and fix a flat. And they'll get down there and they'll blow them up and use them to kick across the river. But, that's the truth of it. There's this problem down there. You know, like, you could, like, want to cross the river and get yourself in a bad situation real quick.
Yeah.
Or up and over on a rock, fall and break your leg. And what if nobody hikes down there in 2 days?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they have the check-in, check-out process at the...
Yeah, you know, another biggest thing about the Black Canyon is, danger-wise, is the poison ivy. Mm. It's up to your shoulders in places, and you're walking through bushes, and you realize, I just walked through 100 yards of poison ivy.
Oh,
and you got on, you're just waiting, it's so hot out, you're wet wading boots, and, you know, I'm not allergic to poison ivy, but people have come out of there and had to go straight to the hospital.
Oh,
and,
boy.
You know... Yeah, so that's another thing.
Yeah.
A lot of poison ivy down there. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, let's, lastly, we just got about 5 minutes left, talk about Gunnison River Gorge. We got a question, David from Fort Collins. He says, what's the best time for the hike in fishing on the BLM section of the Gunnison Gorge? He says, I've gone in late May and the water was still rather high. What's he talking about, BLM section?
The BLM section is the bottom of the Black Canyon National Park where the Chucker Trail is.
Chucker,
and,
Bobcat, Duncan, Ute.
Yeah. But anyways, the best time, you know, I actually consulted with one of my guides, Jake, and he says the fall. He was just like, you know, there's not as many people down there. The river's at a real manageable rate. You can get across the river. He likes hopper-dropper fishing, and he says the blueing fishing's outstanding. And he goes, you go in down those trails, and there's nobody down there. You go down there during the stonefly hatch, there's a lot of people down those trails.
How long are those trails, Jason?
You know, the short one's going to be a mile and a half, 2 miles. One of them's 4 miles.
That's quite a hike, yeah.
It really is. You know, I like paying the horses and taking a little Super Puma down and running the boat down. People can hire the outfitter, but you question yourself on a hot day, why am I doing this?
But you know, those are all that's all public water, it looks like, down there?
Oh yeah, the whole thing.
The
Black Canyon, the whole length of the Black Canyon. And the Gunnison Gorge is public.
Okay.
And, you know, then you hit Leroy's and Smith Fork comes in, and then you got a whole bunch more public down below that out into, you know, towards Delta.
Yeah. Another question. I'm 72 years old and in good health. I would like to hike the Ute Trail in early September and spend a couple nights at one of the hikers' camps in the Caddis Camp area. What am I getting myself into, and what can I expect the wade fishing to be like in that area of the Gunnison Gorge? So you just described that fall-type area.
Yeah.
So you can camp down there. It's not a problem.
Oh, yeah. Yep. There's camping down there. The thing that, on this question, people can contact me, and I'll put them in with the top guides down there. You know, these guys that are down there every day, I mean, they're going to be flat out honest with them, you know. I'm not the expert on Ute Trail and the Caddis Camp. You know, I floated through it. I've never hiked the Ute Trail.
Yeah.
You
okay.
Know, so yeah.
But definitely a totally different float experience from what you said before. You want to take a rubber boat down there?
Yeah, it's
not
a little
hard boat.
Exciting. No, they're all inflated boats, and you know, the guides get out and scout the rapids, and you know, if there are people are you know, a little questionable on wanting to run it, they'll walk them around and then run through empty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the outfitters are ultra safe down there.
Yeah. Okay. That, I think, does it for our question. Let me just check one more time online here. No other questions? Okay. So, wrap things up here. Want everybody to stick with me a few more minutes. When we return, we're going to be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. And then we're also going to give away that one-day float trip with Jason Booth
right
as your guide on the Gunnison. That's outstanding, and courtesy of Gunnison River Guides. So stick with me just a couple more minutes, and we'll do just that. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which shares a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website, www.familyties.com. That's T-Family and then T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and leave us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away a few prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database, and if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so, you know, next time for our next show. You don't want to miss out on possibly winning one of these great prizes. I will, and if you are one of the lucky winners, then we'll contact you after the show on how to receive your prize there. Hold on a second. I just got to get my database fired up here, and then we'll do the drawings and see what we got here. So the first thing we're going to do a drawing for is one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you don't know about the Federation of Fly Fishers, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. They're a great organization to support. They do all kinds of great things for us and the environment around the world, actually. So check out fedflyfishers.org. Winner for this is Sam Brown in Ohio. So congratulations, Sam. And like I said, we'll contact you after the show to get you set up with them. The second prize we're going to give away is a one-year subscription of the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at AmatoBooks.com. Amato has some great publications and great books on fly fishing, and so you'll want to check out their website as well. And our winner here is Dennis Jones. Dennis Jones in Arizona. So congratulations, Dennis. Congratulations, Sam. I'm glad you were able to play and be a winner in those drawings. Okay, so now we're going to do a question. Let's see. What will my question be? Now, to participate in this, you're going to go to the homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. You're going to submit your answer with your name and email address there, location. Fill out that form and send that in, and that's how you'll answer the question. Don't play this game if you don't think you can actually join Jason on the river there. He's been gracious enough to offer this. And the deal is if you win, then you can call. We'll put you in touch with Jason, and you guys can figure out a day when you can go visit him over there and go fishing with Jason. So he said he's going to be, you know, he's been pretty open, you know, of course, given any bookings he already has, but he'll work with you on a date and set that up. So I think that's a great offer that Jason has made. Okay. Let me try this one on for size. Jason was pretty excited talking about a lot of things on the river, but there was one event that takes place only one time a year, that he was pretty excited about. What was that event? Describe that event where the guides needed to be on the river at a particular time to enjoy the benefits of this. Describe that event. Now, Jason, you're going to have to help me out with this. The first answer I got was the green drake hatch during the rain. That's not what I was looking for. Hold on a second here. Hold on a second. I want to be fair about this. Hold on, folks. Just give me a second.
That was a pretty good one, though.
Yeah. Okay. So so we're on the now everybody, I just muted everybody out and make sure I'm on the same page with Jason here. So, okay, so that's not what we're looking for here. Let's see if we get another one. And, yeah, I think this is going to be it. Jason, I got an answer, salmon fry release. And that sounded like a pretty exciting thing. So Dave Shoemaker, and Dave's only in, he's right in Golden. So this will make it easy. You just got yourself a day on the river with Jason Booth. So, Dave, send me your phone number. I've got your email address here. Send me your phone number so that I can give that to Jason, and then actually we'll email you Jason's contact information as well, and then you guys can connect and figure something out. But congratulations. This was a first, and Dave, you should be darn excited to get over there in Gunnison and do some fishing. So congratulations. I hope you enjoy it and you have a great time. That's it for our drawing. And I want to thank you, Jason, again, for taking your time out. The start of a busy season, it sounds like, and spending time with us. Sharing your knowledge and your experience. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, no problem. It was quite enjoyable. Our next broadcast will be on May 25th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. On that show, I'm going to interview Henry Cohn, and our topic for the show is going to be sodium-free stripers. Henry has been pursuing striped bass for over 30 years in both saltwater and freshwater. So join us and find out how Henry finds hooks and lands these freshwater giant stripers. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Watermaster, Front Range Anglers, Housatonic River Outfitters for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.